Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. Disrespect welcomes Cliff Chatterton, CEO of the WARAMPS, and today, particularly Chairman of the National Council of Veteran Associations in Canada. We're going to talk about the veterans and veterans' relatives' claim for $4.6 billion in interest on veterans' pensions held by the federal government. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. You know, a lot of people know me as Chief Executive Officer of the WARAMPS of Canada.
Right.
And I'm not acting in that capacity in this particular instance.
All right.
Secondly, I have a claim as a qualified advocate before the Human Rights Committee. So if it goes to the Human Rights Commission, I'd be called unquestionably.
Well, let's hope it doesn't go there. I have a feeling that that probably wouldn't result in any billions of dollars in awards.
No, I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. But in this particular issue, I'm speaking as chairman of the National Council of Veteran Associations.
Okay.
I might also say the only large group that is not part of our National Council is the Legion. But the Legion has now come out with a letter of support for my stand.
All right.
Yeah.
The award for disabled vets and the length of time that it's taken has outlived most of the vets. I think that's at the heart of your issue. Where do the veterans stand right now?
Well, firstly, Judge Brokenshaw has been looking at the legal aspects of whether this was held by the government in a trust arrangement, and if so, he feels that interest should have been paid on the funds. But Veterans Affairs looks at it quite differently. They look at it as an added benefit not available under law to veterans who were unable to handle their monies when they were wards of DVA as mentally incompetent people.
So let me get this straight. Essentially,
yeah.
Veterans Affairs regards this as a favor.
Absolutely. They've said as much, as a matter of fact.
I dislike the view that it's a favor, but because I don't think that disabled people who are due money should get it as a favor, but it is an extraordinary arrangement. We can go that far.
Well, I was against them calling it that, too.
Yeah.
What they should have said was, this is an extraordinary arrangement under which we're looking after the man's money, but
yeah.
That's all we're doing. We're not
yeah.
holding it in trust. We don't have authority to invest it, and we must account for every penny of it.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I usually fight for veterans as hard as I can, but in this particular issue, I don't think that the veterans concerned have a leg to stand on. And the reason I say that is that there never was any authority under the Veterans Affairs Act to do anything except look after the man's money if he requested it. There never was any authority for them to take the funds, invest them, and pay interest on them. They were simply custodians of the money as long as the man wanted them to be custodians of the money.
Right.
And that was most of them for the duration of their lives because they were mentally incompetent. Where the issue becomes a real issue in my mind, the media has played it as being an issue for disabled veterans.
Right.
And, of course, particularly we're just finished with the Year of the Veteran, and there was a lot of emphasis placed on making certain that the government did the right thing by those who had served in the military forces, particularly in time of war.
Right.
But the issue is not one of a government benefit for having served. The issue is was the government acting as a trust company looking after the funds, and if so, is the government obligated to pay interest? Well, of course, the government just says we never were anything except custodians of this money. We didn't have the use of it. We had to put it into accounts where it was being held not for the purposes of government spending, but it was being held for incompetent veterans to be paid out when they said so, which was usually when they died.
Was it, in fact, sequestered from other money?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. I mean, you could. I checked the records with Deer Lodge Hospital in Winnipeg. If the veteran was mentally incompetent and his pension was being administered by DVA,
right.
There was an account in his name held in the records of Deer Lodge Hospital in Winnipeg
uh-huh.
to be paid out at his direction.
Okay.
Now, if the man wanted out of the arrangement at any time, assuming he was mentally competent, he could get it. Most of them, however, just allowed the funds to stay there until they died.
Right. Can you say that they allowed the funds when, in fact, they're not competent? If they're not competent, they're not free to make any decision about the money, and the government, who's holding the money, made the decisions for them. I have some kind of conflict with understanding that.
No, that's a legitimate question. You're dealing here, of course, with another issue, and that is that if the person was mentally incompetent to the extent that he could not handle his monies, then it stands to reason that he was not mentally competent to say who should handle them. And in lieu of an arrangement with the man, which the man would understand, the Veterans Affairs said, well, we do have authority to hold a man's funds for him
right. Until
such time as he dies or their competent custodian could be found. Every now and again, the man would have said in his earlier days, look, I have a son somewhere. And then DVA would then look the son up, and if the man, despite his being suffering from dementia or whatever, if the man was able to say, well, give $200 to my son, DVA would do it. Otherwise, DVA was in a tough spot because they had to have authority before they could release these monies to anyone. Where it became a real issue was these pensioners or people in receipt of War Veterans Allowance, which is a sort of a welfare measure for veterans.
Yeah.
They built up huge estates because DVA was paying their pension or paying their allowances all the time they were in the hospitals.
Yep.
So when they died, some of them had estates of as much as $500,000. When eventually DVA had to find a relative or something, if DVA could find a relative and paid the monies, naturally the relative would say, well, how come there's no interest on this?
Uh-huh.
And DVA had to say, well, I'm sorry, but there never was any authority under which we could do other than hold the money in an account for the man. There was no authority to act as a trust agent in the thing.
Really?
No, never was. And I'm quoting now the Section 5 of the DVA Act, which says that the department has the capability, if the man is judged medically, that's by his doctors in DVA, if he's judged to be mentally incompetent, DVA has the authority to hold the monies in the man's name until such time as he dies. And that's usually the case.
From my point of view, that cuts both ways. It may not grow, but it can never decline. Because it's not invested, it can never decline.
Yes.
So their offer to hold it is a form of guarantee that comes at an understandable price.
Yes, and not only that, but like all monies which are held by the government, it does increase in accordance with the cost of living allowance. For example,
Yes. Okay.
This year, the cost of living allowance on my pension is something like 7% over the past 12 months.
Oh.
So if they were holding my monies for me, the monies that they're holding would have an accrual.
Well, they would be indexed the following year to increase by 7% then.
Yeah, that's quite correct.
Yeah.
We have the classic case here of the long-lost relative who shows up at the funeral or at the reading of the will and says, well, how much am I going to get? And at probate, the lawyer would say, your share would be, $150,000.
Yeah.
And the beneficiary would then say, well, where'd this money come from? Well, it came from DVA. They were holding it as custodian.
Right.
And then the man said, well, didn't they pay any interest? And the answer was, no, they didn't, because they never had any authority to pay interest. But by the same token, they never had any authority to use it.
That's right.
Whereas if it was Canada Trust or anything, you put some money in Canada Trust, they will pay on an annuity or something, they'll pay a certain amount of interest, but Canada Trust has the use of your money, whereas in this case, DVA did not have the use of the money, just sat in an account.
Let's go further. Let's imagine that it was placed in something like Confederation Life. How much of your money would you have today? It'd be a toss-up, wouldn't it?
Absolutely right.
And now we'll take a short break with the blues. Thank you.
And now, return to our interview.
They tell me they're going to appeal it.
They do tell you that. They tell you that.
Yes, and they've told the media that they're going to appeal it. I have noticed in my work that in the last year or so, people particularly have been very conscious of making sure that the veterans are looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my record is pretty clear that I've pushed pretty hard in some areas for that. But in this particular area, I have nowhere to push because I know the law. And the only way that the law could be changed is if it goes to the Supreme Court of Canada. Even the Superior Court of Ontario, who made the decision, doesn't have the authority, the final authority. And that's why it'll have to go to the Supreme Court of Canada if anything is going to be done. But by that time, we have another 3 or 4 years, and there won't be anybody left who could benefit. You know.
Yeah, I see your regret. In the best of all possible worlds, what would you like to see political parties advocating for with regard to this benefit in this election?
Yes, I put a proposal up to the Minister of Veterans Affairs last July, and I said, look, this is going to get lost in the courts and court actions and whatnot. What I suggest you do is get a waiver on the whole issue, set up a committee, dig out any justifiable cases, and have someone total up what the interest should have been and go ahead and pay it.
I see. So qualify the accounts first.
Absolutely.
And then pay the interest.
And so that there's no living veteran or spouse who is being denied something if they could benefit from it. But a DVA would certainly not take into account applications from 52nd degree cousins or something like that.
Well, you get into a gray area that surfaced in the Liberal platform too, which is how do we take care of caregivers who are not blood relatives?
Yes.
And you're speaking veterans and their spouses, understandably. I'm wondering what happens to veterans' children or, as you say, veterans' cousins who have legitimately taken on their care. What do you think should happen?
Well, you see, you have to go back to the law, and the Veterans Pension Act will pay a pension to a veteran, his spouse, or any child under 17 years of age if it's a male, 16 if it's a female.
Right.
Now, once the child reaches one of those magic ages, then that child is no longer a ward of DVA, and DVA has nothing to do with them, but they still are responsible to pay a pension to the man,
right.
And if the man dies, they're responsible to pay a widow's pension.
Right.
And they do; they continue to do that until the man dies, and then the widow dies. Then, of course, they're off the books for DVA.
So, as far as they're concerned, if they cannot assume the veteran's care, then it is not their liability. They will provide for his care or her care, but other than that, they are not going to cover any expenses for care in another environment.
Use the word fiscal. I mean, they have no fiscal responsibility for anybody except a veteran or his spouse or a child of school age. And that's where it dies as far as the legislation is concerned. The one case that really set the issue was a case of a man by the name of Otherson, who's now dead.
Yeah.
Now, with regard to Otherson, a relative showed up and said, look, I was a niece, and she was a niece, and she got paid the balance of Otherson's estate after he died, but that's it, and she wanted interest paid on it.
Right.
And that's when the lawyers said, well, this is a classic class action case, and I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
I mean, I think you can use class actions for almost anything, but that doesn't mean you're going to win them.
So that whole $4.6 billion is all interest?
Yes.
That's all it is?
Yes, that's all it is, Jeff. It's 100% interest payments.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that if DVA was authorized to do that and pay out $4.5 billion,
mm-hmm.
What about my 10,000 cases I've got before DVA now for long-term care beds? Because DVA says we don't have the beds. You see, DVA turned all their hospitals over to the provinces or Toronto University, and it becomes a real issue of, when you get into fiscal responsibility, a real issue of who's there to protect the taxpayer. Now, the taxpayer does very well by the veteran, so far as I'm concerned, but you can't expect the taxpayer to fork out $4.5 billion for long-distant relatives. And that's really why the Department of Justice has to appeal it.
I see.
And we've had proposals in front of parliamentary committees for the last 3 or 4 years saying that you're not meeting the need. There's a long waiting list in every city in Canada you want to mention, or every place where there is a DVA institution. There's a long, long waiting list to get in, and there are no beds. And so what they try to do is they try to buy space from the provinces, but as you probably know, the provinces are short on long-term care beds anyway, and the provinces have no responsibility for veterans at all.
And the provinces actually inherited the DVA beds.
Absolutely.
So in effect, they're now at the province's disposal, and the DVA has to go on bended knee to get any back.
Yes. The only example where that's not effective is in the University of Toronto, which runs Sunnybrook. The Board of Governors of Sunnybrook are appointed by the University of Toronto.
Yes. And oh, I see, rather than political appointments.
That's correct, yeah. Or rather than come under the Ontario government. In Manitoba, Deer Lodge is the big hospital,
right,
and that comes under the care of the Minister of Health for the province.
Right.
And they have an admissions board where they will allow so many veterans space, but they also say we have to save some space for non-veterans who are civilians, because we have a responsibility to the civilian, not to the veteran. And so they give the veteran a bed, but they give it to him as a civilian, not as a veteran.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, it's a very complicated issue, and I happen to know quite a bit about it. Now, when DVA gave up its hospitals, they gave them up entirely to provincial jurisdiction. Now, I don't
Why did they do that?
Why?
Yeah, expenses?
No, it wasn't. Why they did it was that they couldn't get doctors who wanted to take active treatment cases.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so they just couldn't staff them, but they held back a certain number of beds where they could staff them with people who could provide long-term care in a hospital setting.
So in effect, they were kind of driven to do this.
Absolutely, yeah. Particularly these younger doctors, they were coming out of the medical schools and looking for active cases.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, my God, just a minute, I didn't take 10 years extra training, you know, to look after old veterans. Let DVA look after them.
Oh, I see.
And DVA said, well, okay, but DVA wouldn't pay the money that these doctors wanted. And besides, the doctors didn't want to practice that kind of medicine.
Well, beyond that, the doctors need the money with the costs today. They can't be choosy when they graduate.
No,
I don't
absolutely
imagine about
not
what they're paid.
No. Yeah. I think the DVA has a legitimate reason right now to say to me, look, we can't take these cases on because we don't have the money.
Yeah.
But if they have to turn around and add another $4.5 billion to their budget and then pay it out to distant relatives, then I'm going to have much, as an advocate, we're going to have, advocates are going to have a much more difficult time.
So from your point of view,
Your
point of view, today's veterans are competing with the relatives of yesterday's veterans for this money.
The guy says, I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly what it is.
What you're also saying is that these funds have been paid out.
Oh, yes.
What we're talking about now is the interest. They literally been paid, like cash in hand?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. DVA, firstly, because it's before the courts, they can't come out and defend themselves. And even if they could, you can imagine the uproar in the media if DVA says, no, we have authority to pay this money, but we're not going to pay it because it's not justifiable and legitimate. It was a calculation by the courts.
Has any political spokesperson, either in power or in opposition or standing for election, come out with an alternative or a deeper understanding of this issue, such as you've explained it to me and to a listener today?
Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. And, of course, all political parties are hiding behind the old adage that it's before the courts.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't stop them if they wanted to make a commitment, but they realize that it would be misunderstood in the media. Whatever party, if they added a plank in their platform saying, look, pay this $4.5 billion, then they're going against a decision, and somebody would say, well, you can't do that unless it goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court takes the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and what else, and decides as what they call an ex gratia payment, which means beyond the law, of course.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess what you would be hoping for, realistically, I'm trying to grasp the big picture here, is that the federal government will come back, or at least will appeal and then immediately follow it with a settlement offer that would include living veterans rather than the distant relatives of dead veterans.
I think that the answer is, regardless of the law, put up a proposal for an expiration payment for these people, and we'll get all their details, and we'll say, yes, Helen Jones visited her distant uncle every Saturday morning for the last 10 years of her life. Go ahead and pay it to her, as far as I'm concerned. But,
right.
But the kind of relatives that are showing up in this class action are the ones who just came out of the woodwork and said, there are some genuine cases, but they came out of the woodwork and said, hey, wait a minute, the government's got lots of money, I can get a piece of this. The EBA could quite easily solve it by going to an expiration payment. They've done it for merchant seamen. They've done it for Hong Kong veterans. They could do it for this group.
What about the issue of taxes on these payments?
Well, the judge has said that it's not tax-free.
It's not tax-free.
No, not tax-free, you know. And even though there was one quote from one of the lawyers, David Greenaway, who said that as much as they argued for it, the court said we don't have the right to declare this kind of income as being tax-free. Now, that, again, it mitigates against their case because war disability pensions are tax-free.
Oh, so accumulated pensions should be tax-free, too.
Well, absolutely, yeah. What you can do is you can say, well, let's make it available as an expiration payment, which really means that the law doesn't cover it, but we feel that it's something that should be done.
In which case it's made as called for, and no taxes and no complications, just
that's
paid
it
out.
Exactly, Jeff, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I want to clarify one point, and that is that I personally and my organizations, we did not bring this up at this time. It was brought up by the judge,
right,
who declared his decision.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the media got after me and said, well, what do you think about it? And I said, well, I don't see how a judge can overrule the law,
mm-hmm,
unless he does it by means of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and goes to an expiration payment or something. So that makes me look bad.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate your time with me today.
Not at all, Jeff. Good luck to you and good luck to any veterans who are generally involved in this case and where the money shouldn't be paid.
Certainly.
You've been listening to Hilton Rees and Slip Slide and Blues from his album Doing It Right. Coming up, Pete Johnson and Boogie Woogie from original Boogie Woogie Piano Giants. Thank you. Disrespect. We'll be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.